This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
What is up, Atlanta? This is the Mouths of the South podcast coming at you. Well, Josh and I coming at you from the fine studios in Atlanta, Georgia. Sam in Athens, Georgia. Guys, how was the Independence Day?
It was awesome. Still recovering physically, mentally, all of the above. It was a really cool day, and it was a unique game in that we saw a rare instance of Atlanta United falling behind and fighting back. And so that was nice to see, aside from the atmosphere. A great day. You also saw, I think, a different side to Atlanta United getting the win against San Jose.
Yeah, it was certainly another great atmosphere at Bobby Dodd Stadium. Another game that was a little bit messed with by weather, and we were sorry to not have you, Eric, there in person. Hopefully you're feeling better.
I myself was
overall,
under the weather.
Great environment, great day. The fireworks afterwards were cool. And, you know, I kind of wanted to just give a quick shout-out to the fan groups for the TIFO game. It was incredible. Uncle Arthur as Uncle Sam. Just one of the best TIFOs, if not the
best one of the year. Yeah, I loved that. It was awesome, and the crowd got so hyped after seeing it too. There've been a bunch of great ones this season, but that one takes the cake. That was an awesome moment, I thought, and you could just feel the electricity in the crowd after they displayed that thing behind the goal.
Can I ask you guys a rather personal question? And we'll take responses from the Facebook Live group we've got going on. You saw Martinez rip off the shirt after he scored the fourth goal.
Mm-hmm.
We all witnessed it. Would you guys ever feel comfortable wearing the bro?
It's a man's ear.
I get what it is. It still looks weird to see a dude wear what basically looks like a sports bra.
Well, everyone needs a little support there. I mean, you're running around, you know. What is the physical advantage to that? I mean, does that help with shoulders and things
like
that?
For women or for guys?
For a guy.
You know what it is, though. It measures your heart rate. It measures distance. Basically, it's the scientific way of knowing whether you're in form or not. Your fitness is up to snuff and all that.
Isn't there a way to make that mechanism without it looking like a sports bra? Where you can track your
movement.
There's
the one that just goes around your chest, and it doesn't have like the strap over the shoulder.
Yeah. I've seen.
I get why they wear it, but at the same time, I mean, I look at that, I'm like,
yeah. When he takes the shirt off, and you're like,
put the shirt back on.
I'll take the brace.
And again, if he keeps jumping up as high as he got up on that goal that Carmona ended up scoring, and again, if he's able to show some more aerial prowess over the next weeks and months, I don't care what he wears. He has looked very good. And, I mean, just the oohs and ahs you heard from the crowd on his two goals, especially that one with Carmona, because, I mean, he jumps up so high to head the ball in, and, you know, all the keeper can do is parry and Carmona in the right spot at the right time. But, I mean, he literally can wear whatever the heck he wants to wear. And he actually changed cleats at halftime. He was wearing some really bright green cleats at halftime, and he came out wearing a different pair in the second half, so maybe that helped him out there a little bit.
Sam, you mentioned his aerial ability, and I think that's one thing that we haven't talked about a lot. A lot of people haven't talked about a lot with Jose Martinez. You see a fast, pacey striker that you're used to getting in behind. We saw, and we've seen it since he's come back, his ability to, despite his relative height problem, he can still
short stature
right, he can still get up, but we saw him get up above those two big center backs and win a couple balls in the air and score one goal and create another yesterday. So I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head, Sam, when you talked about Martinez, you know, just, you know, kind of jumping out of the gym, so to speak, on multiple instances. And I think that you're seeing the versatility to his game, certainly with his ability to score from crosses on aerial challenges. That was certainly on full display against the San Jose team, with that was already looking to sit back back and defend down a man, you know, having the two center backs sit deep and deal with Martinez. And even though they were expecting the crosses to come into the box, they were expecting Martinez to be moving around wreaking havoc, he's still able to get up above two guys that are considerably bigger than him on multiple occasions and create two big goals for Atlanta United. So big ups to Joseph Martinez. And again, we see all the many ways that he can hurt opposing defenses.
I think Atlanta United, and this is just, I'm not telling you guys how to do your job, but I'm very curious, one, as to how fast Tito Villalba is. I'm very curious as to how high Joseph Martinez is going to jump. I'm very curious
some
about
real athletes
just,
out there.
Just out of curiosity, the wingspan for Vasquez. Like, things like that, I think they should just, like, how much distance can Carmona and Larenowitz cover? Like, how much actual ground?
Sure.
Like, measure that stuff so that we can, like, just, I don't know, for fun.
Yeah,
I know that, like, every week they should have on Atlanta United Weekly on, you know, on the Fox Sports TV channel. I guess it's, what, Tuesday nights at 6:30?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They should have, like, an Atlanta United sports science
That's exactly where I was going. Look, I want Julio Jones and Tito Villalba going against each other in the 40-yard dash.
Oh, yeah.
I want to see Joseph Martinez. I want to see him attempt a dunk. Safely, I want to see him attempt a dunk.
I think Joseph Martinez could throw it down.
I think
he could get up
dunk.
There.
Yeah.
I think he's it was Nate Robinson, little 5'9" guy that could get up. I mean,
you saw how high he can get off the ground. I don't know where his hand dies at holding a basketball and all that, but I'd imagine his vertical for that.
Here's
is no
the thing.
Problem.
We were surprised. Were you surprised at the fact that he scored that way? Because I wasn't.
No,
I
not
knew
at all.
That you'd seen that aerial ability from Joseph Martinez before.
And in preseason as well.
Yeah, you'd seen him. You've seen him get up. I mean, it wasn't a surprise to see him score like that, but man, the power he got behind that ball that he blasted above
fantastic
Bingham
header.
Was, oh my gosh, that was world class.
Yeah, because it wasn't even necessarily in the corner. He was just able to generate so much power from not a great position. I mean, he's inside the 18, but from where he was in the box after receiving that cross from Greg Garza, It's really not an easy header, particularly to put Barry past the goalkeeper. And the amount of power he was able to generate shows that is something that he is very comfortable with doing. And that wasn't once in a lifetime finish. It wasn't something that we're going to see every now and then. Joseph Martinez looks very, very comfortable receiving an aerial cross into the box and going and winning it in the air. And without doubt, I wasn't surprised, Eric. And I think going forward, certainly Atlanta United fans won't be surprised either.
So here's two things that I think the past 2 weeks, because they were fantastic games for more than just the fact that they won. They go up to Columbus and they get a 2-0 win, two goals off the back of Tito Villalba, excellent goals. And look, as much as I crap on him, again, I think the one great aspect he does have is his speed. And he used that to perfection on that first goal. And you saw him in other moments, that one where he tried to curl it around the keeper far post.
In Columbus,
that
you mean?
That went out wide.
Yeah, yeah.
That was... Oh my gosh, that was beautiful. The run, the moves, the way he received the ball, the way he set himself up, it was beautiful. And that's what I want to see more of. He doesn't need to be a guy that necessarily beats a guy 1v1 all the time. But moments like that are why he's here. And I thought he had a fantastic game against Columbus.
He made the difference.
The first goal was fantastic. The second goal I thought was just kind of like the icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else in between I thought was even better than the second goal.
Well, one great play that he made.
I was more impressed with his off-ball runs and his movement and his just the way he used his speed against Columbus more so than I was with that second goal. Let's face it.
It's a good finish.
It's a great finish.
Yeah.
But a lucky bounce that went his way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what you mentioned, the off-the-ball movement, Eric, the one chance that he missed with his left foot where Almiron slid him through in Columbus on the counterattack, and he was a bit unlucky not to finish. I think Mensah threw him off a bit on the chance. If you go back and look at that run, the second we win the ball back, he makes a 60, 70-yard lung-busting run to get in behind. And so I thought, his movement is huge. And when you have a wide player that's fast and can finish and can kind of sneak into the center the way Villalba does, it's really a problem for defenses, because not only do you have to deal with Martinez, with Almiron, with Assad coming inside, you have to worry about a guy like Villalba sneaking in behind you, receiving a direct long ball, and then beating you with his pace and finishing ability in behind. Certainly in Columbus, he did that time and time again.
And
though, is, and Eric, this kind of goes to what you've really been saying about him all season long, it's inconsistency, because, you know, he was so good against Columbus, and then in that first half, particularly in the first half against San Jose, he was pretty bad with a lot of bad chances, missed shots. And there was one play in particular where he could have played Jose Martinez through, and he didn't. But I think we are starting to see a little bit more consistency and a little bit more signs of improvement from him. And that's really all you can ask for in terms of somebody who had kind of been struggling to start to play a little better and with a little bit more consistency.
Well, what you saw was that you saw that the tactics, the reason why Atlanta United likes to play out the back and kind of circulate that ball to the back is that, again, to draw that, in this case, Columbus, draw them forward. And as soon as they did that, you noticed that Can was much more liberal in how often he just played the long ball. And in two of those occasions, I want to say, one was the goal to Tito.
Yeah, and then the missed chance for Martinez.
Those were, again, that's exactly the way you want to set up, or the way you want your opponent to be kind of spread out, is so that you have those kind of opportunities going forward, so that Tito Vizcaya can run on the ball. And it's not, I've been hard on him because this, I don't think the players on the field, not Tata Martino, but the players on the field have put Tito in a position to succeed, to use his speed the best way he can.
One thing,
most of it has been, you know, let's lay it off to the side.
Sure.
Let's put him out wide, make him cut in, go 1v1 with the defender. But when you, again, when you use his talent to at its best in moments where it's beneficial to Tito, he shined, and he had multiple moments in this game. He had the couple moments where he maybe could have passed it off to Martinez or Admiron or whoever. But in the moments where he did shine, it was because he was using his speed.
Yeah.
And I think Atlanta United has to find a way to utilize that more often in him.
One thing I see Atlanta United struggling a bit with at times is the incredible contrast between the players on the left and right flank. Garza and Assad are a perfect fit for each other in the sense that they're bombing forward. You're seeing Assad cutting inside. You're seeing Garza getting out wide, putting crosses into the box. You know, that's a swashbuckling, aggressive duo that know what they're doing. On the right side, it's been totally different. First of all, you had Tyrone Mears there for most of the season, who, and we've discussed this so much, I'm sure everyone's tired of hearing us talking about it, so we won't go into it, but again, not a great fit for the system, a guy that likes to cross the ball into the box as opposed to combine with his teammates and keep the ball on the floor. And then there've been, with the injuries to Martinez, the suspensions throughout the season, we haven't seen Vizcaya able to play consistently on the right wing. He's had to move inside and play up top quite a bit. We've seen Julian Gressel slide in there, and certainly Vizcaya and whoever that right back is, whether it be Walks, whether it be Mears, that's a completely different set of players than on the across the pitch from Assad and Garza. So I think you see the team at times struggling, particularly a team that likes to switch the fields very quickly and move it from left to right. But you've got a left side that basically plays completely different than your opposite flank. And sometimes I think it's created issues with balance. I think it's created issues with consistency and possession. And it's certainly something that I think Atlanta United has to improve on. And I think the biggest key for that is not so much Vizcaya, but finding a right back, whether it be Walks going forward or whether it be Mears getting back in or Mark Bloom or Lloyd or whomever, finding a right back that can play with Vizcaya or Gressel down that right side and combine, because that's not something that I've seen a lot this season. And again, I think it's just because you're seeing players on the right side that are completely different from Assad and Garza on the left.
Yeah, I mean, and I think one thing, too, that has been an issue with this team has kind of been, and this is kind of piggybacking off what Josh just said there, but it's just kind of been the connectivity between the different levels, you know, from the defense to the midfield to the attackers. And one thing that has been an issue is, you know, aerial crossing in. And I think that we finally saw Atlanta United able to take advantage of good positions to be in. I know that there were a lot of crosses in, probably more crosses in against San Jose
Surely.
Than there have been in any game for Atlanta United. Maybe that's just something that Tata Martino was trying to drive home. It's like, look, we've got to get better at scoring like this. And, you know, it yielded results. I mean, it yielded the results on Joseph getting up and Carmona able to tap in there. And then also, I believe it was Gressel who assisted there on Joseph's actual headed goal. So just
or walks assisted
at the door, and eventually you bust it down.
Yeah, and so you basically had an assist. Yeah, so the walks goal comes from Gressel, the Martinez goal.
That's right.
Yeah, but similar instance. It comes from a wide area. Then you saw the Carmona goal was basically set up from a great cross from Garza to Martinez, and Carmona's there to finish the rebound. And then the winner from Martinez comes from Greg Garza again. And Sam, one thing that you mentioned, I think is a good point, is that you saw Atlanta United show an ability to score in a different type of way, and it's something we've talked about. You could see that San Jose opened the game very aggressively, trying to high press, you know, do the things that put Atlanta United in tough positions, and I thought they played very well. After the red card came, and this is to be expected, you saw them drop behind the ball and concede the wide areas and allow Atlanta United to cross into the box, which is why I think you saw so many crosses coming from Greg Garza, coming from walks, coming from Gressel later on, because they were basically just conceding those wide areas in the final third and saying, this is where we know you struggle. We know that you are not a team that is able to kind of lump the ball into the box and score from headers, score from volleys, score from loose balls. And Atlanta United showed that they could do that, and to great acclaim. So I think that was not just the fact that you come back and win, but the way you came back, the types of goals you scored against the type of setup that we saw from San Jose, which is a setup that a lot of teams will employ against Atlanta United, whether it's 11v11 or 11v10. So I think you look at that and you have a lot to be positive about, because you've shown that versatility to your game, that ability to score in different ways. And certainly this way coming, as I mentioned, in the air on crosses is not something we've seen all season, and not consistently at least. And you saw Atlanta United do it very, very well and basically win the game against San Jose due to their crossing.
I've got a question for you two guys on the last Martinez goal. I kind of said on Twitter that I think he may have played it off the post on purpose because of the angle he had. Do you think that I'm kind of overstepping there?
I don't think anyone plays it off the post on purpose. I don't think anyone does it on purpose.
Sometimes you know your angles. There have been times where even Zidane and guys like that have said sometimes you have to, you know, use the entirety of the goal.
He cushioned it off the post. I mean, I think definitely you look at the way he struck the ball and the way that he. I mean, I would never say a guy means to hit the post. But if you look at the way that he positioned his body and at the last second decides to go near post past Bingham with his left foot, certainly I think the type of spin he put on the ball made it so if it was going to hit the post, it was going to bounce in after that. I wouldn't say he was aiming for the post on purpose, but certainly the angle he took and the way he took it indicates that, and especially squeezing it into such a small space as he had to, indicated that if I put the right type of spin on this shot, if it does hit the post, it's going to go in. It's going to cross the goal line once it hits the post. But don't think he was aiming necessarily at the post.
Look, here, the biggest takeaway, at least from... So, again, I mentioned the fact that both Columbus going on the road and getting a win, which is something that is outside of Minnesota... Which, let's face it, at the time, Minnesota was a dumpster fire.
The Columbus performance was fantastic. To me, that's one of the most rewarding 3 points of the season.
Agreed. It's because, again, they went on the road. They did what they had to do. They knew it was not a must-win game, but it was the closest thing to a must-win game that they could possibly have had to go through mid-season.
Yeah,
because you just had so much momentum after that. Who did they play before that?
The Colorado.
Yeah. They had so much momentum. They got 3 points. They wanted to keep that momentum going. They wanted to go into Columbus, a team they'd already beaten, continue that point streak. And now we're looking at 9 points in 3 games. And to go into this kind of rest period where they don't do anything for about 2 weeks.
Right.
And then go straight into Orlando.
Yeah.
And that's obviously a huge game. You have the most time. What I like about the way the schedule is set up, and I'll get back to my points in a second, but what I like about the schedule set up is that it's perfect. You've got Orlando's going to come off a loss, it looks like. They're down. Last I checked, they were down to Toronto FC 2-0, which is good because that
3-1
means 3-1. Mm-hmm. So that means that they can't make up any points on us. I think they would have passed us had they won.
Yeah, I believe that's correct.
And at the same time, I think the New York Red Bulls are losing.
They're 2-2 in New England right now.
All right,
now.
Well, either way.
These will be wrapped up by the time we finish.
You want to separate yourself as much as you can between the New York Red Bulls, basically anyone underneath you, underneath that red line, as much separation as possible. Yeah. And so Atlanta United is doing a great job right now of doing that. And so they're going to have a big test coming off this break in 2 weeks against Orlando City, really twice in a row. But what ultimately it's going on the road, getting the points, and then in this game against San Jose, they got punched in the mouth twice. Once in the very beginning of the game, they score, they even the game up. They score the second and immediately get punched in the face again.
I mean,
and when they got punched in the face the second time with the Wondolowski goal, which God, screw you, Wando, why can't you do that in a World Cup? you start thinking all the bad Atlanta sports thoughts,
right?
And one of those is, we still got so much time to blow this game away. we got so much time to blow this what would have been a great game. And what I love about it is that the gutsy performance in coming back twice from that.
I think it shows a lot of character. I still think, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more between now and Orlando, the performance in Columbus, while that was very solid in the back, I think you saw the team kind of revert back to what we've seen all season against San Jose on the back four. There were good moments. I think that they have certainly played worse this season, but I go back.
And going down a man helped, obviously.
Absolutely.
But at the same time,
no question.
I mean, you got to take what you're given. And I you don't excuse the fact that, look, just because you went down a man doesn't mean we can't still win the game. And it was 2-2 with, 30 minutes left?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah, 25-30 minutes, and I think, I mean, it's frustrating because the goal to make it 2-2 from Wondolowski right after we take the lead 2-1 on the Martinez goal, you see, I saw Michael Parkhurst and Pires come together and have a very animated conversation before the kickoff, which is clearly because this is a team that has conceded a lot of opportunities soon after scoring goals or early in halves. So they're conceding goals from kickoffs or conceding opportunities from kickoffs. And clearly that was the discussion, was let's not let anyone get behind us. Let's see out these next 5 minutes, and then we can get control of the game back and go back and score. And within seconds, you see Pires fall asleep at the back post with like the last guy that you would think you would lose track of in Wondolowski and give up the equalizer. So that's super, super demoralizing. I mean, I didn't even see the goal. I was at the game. I saw the discussion with Parkhurst and Pires, and basically, you know, everyone.
You didn't see it on TV. At the time, you didn't see it on TV.
Yeah, no, yeah.
They just cut immediately to the cross, and then a second later, it was in the goal.
It's pretty incredible. And those, look, you just can't concede those types of goals if you want to make if you want to really be a threat in the playoffs, because good teams will kill you with those types of opportunities. And certainly San Jose could have created more if it was 11-11. So I still think defensively there are some issues to solve, but I think from a mental standpoint to fight all the way back to get to 2-1. And to concede a goal in that manner and so quickly is really difficult to take mentally. And I didn't get the feeling that for one second the team got down on their luck. They took the kickoff and they went right back to work. And that's exactly what you want to see. And again, I think that does show, while we have a lot of these same deficiencies that I'm discussing, I think mentally it shows that the team has kind of cleared a hurdle a little bit to really, as you said, Eric, get punched in the mouth on multiple occasions, the second time being one where you kind of never saw it coming. I mean, to score so quickly and to immediately go back to work and go grab the third and fourth goals is just fantastic. And it's something that I don't think we see this team do a month, 2 months ago. I don't think
it's
we see
funny
them
on
do
that Wando goal. I was crafting a tweet about how Joseph Martinez had just tied Tito Villalba and Miguel Almiron with 8 goals on the season.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't even finished like typing that out, and then Wondolowski scored.
It was crazy. Yeah.
I was trying to figure out a way to make fun of Wondolowski, like, I wish you would have done that against Belgium or something like that. And then I saw a stream of like 15 tweets that said that exact same thing.
Yeah,
question.
Everyone around me's reaction was that too when he scored. Yeah. Where was that against Belgium, buddy?
All right, let's hit some questions on Facebook Live, and we can start on what I think might be a key component to the San Jose second goal. Thoughts on Kyle Reinisch? It was one game; he wasn't really asked to do much. And this comes from Randall Lehman, and this is he just asked thoughts on Kyle Reinisch. But I'm kind of ad-libbing at this point, but he wasn't asked to do too much. I don't think he could really be at fault for the first goal. That was at first I put a lot of the blame on Tito for mishandling the ball in the midfield, and then you saw the defending. And
it was a very unlucky deflection.
It
as
wasn't
well.
Terrible. It wasn't super awesome. The deflection didn't help either. But I mean, the shot was from so close, and he had such a great She had such a he had so much power
you
behind
can't
that
get
ball.
There's not, for not yeah. saving a shot from that range.
There's not a lot of Kyle Reddish could have done about that. The second goal, that's where I have a little more issue because he could have probably done more to punch that ball away, just interfere a little more than he did. Look, that's a tight angle for Wando to hit that in because not only is he trying to get it through Kyle Reynish, I forget. I think it's Lorenowitz. Oh no, it's Perez that's also falling on him.
Perez
toward the
was
end
marking
there.
Wondolowski.
Yeah. So I mean, look, it's tough to say that it's both goals. Either one. Look, I don't blame him for the first goal. The second one, I thought he could have done a little more. I don't know.
I thought he was fine. I mean,
I did too. I mean, he didn't do anything to kill you. He didn't do anything to cost you either of those goals. He wouldn't have been to blame for if you only took a point away from that match, he wouldn't have been to blame. He was a great fill-in.
No, and when you consider that he hadn't played an MLS match, I believe, since 2014, I mean, that's a really difficult spot to come into. And I thought, he did his job. There were a couple of shots he didn't really get worked, but he didn't make any mistakes, and he held on to those shots. And I think that the main difference I see with him to Can, the drop off is with the ball at his feet. And we did, fortunately, because of the game becoming 11v10, we didn't have to use him a lot. But you could see in quite a few situations, Atlanta United's game plan coming when the goalie hits the ball long is clearly to try to hit it to one of the wide areas around midfield and try to have Assad or your fullback get up and win the ball. Reynish could hardly get the ball there in a few situations. Not saying he can't kick it there, but I'm saying he couldn't get it there. There were situations where he was under pressure where he just kind of had to lump it long and it didn't fit. So certainly, I mean, I think he did fine. But clearly, I think if there's a way that Guzan gets called back from the Gold Cup before the Orlando match, I think Guzan's in net.
What I said at some point, I know I said it. I don't know when I said it, but I know I said it at some point. The situation with Guzan and Can was going to be a lot like having too much starting pitching as it is, and then in baseball, and then having a guy come off the injured reserve list or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, some way, it's like the sports universe knows how to resolve this thing himself.
Yeah, I know it happens all the time.
And so, Can gets hurt, and I'm not saying no one wished Can to get hurt. No one wanted that on him. But at the same time, it is perfectly convenient that he gets hurt at right now, and that he'll spend. If the 6 to 8 week timetable is correct, he's going to spend at least four.
Yeah.
Watching games, and if it's even longer, then you're looking at this is it's a perfect opportunity for Guzan to step up and do his thing.
Absolutely.
That way, we don't have to have that controversy anymore. We don't have to have that that discussion anymore. It's going to be Guzan. That's not even debatable anymore.
Yeah,
and we can move on.
I am a bit gutted for Can though. I mean,
I am too.
He's not really going to have a chance to fight
to defend
for his
himself,
job,
yeah.
and we've talked about this so much. We all think that Guzan was going to win the job anyway.
I think it was going to be given a shot.
Yeah.
He still has to prove to me that he's good with his feet.
Right. Sure. Yeah. No, that's true. But I think that certainly if we see Guzan come back play, Can misses those 3-4 matches that, as you mentioned, Eric, I think if you see Guzan come back and play well, that by the time Can is able to play again and he's healthy, he'll be the clear number two. So I do feel bad for him. But again, it's something that we've discussed quite a bit, and it makes certainly Tata's job a little bit easier because you can just go to the veteran Guzan, and if he plays well when Can is fit again, you just throw your hands up and say, we've got our number one keeper firing on all cylinders.
The same arguments I would have made for Can as him being, the consistent guy back there. He's been fine. He knows how to handle the ball with his feet. All the same arguments are going to be the same arguments I make for Guzan, assuming he does well and proves that he can do his work with his feet.
I'm intrigued to see that.
Can's not coming back and taking this job as long as Guzan is capable.
Yeah.
Even if it's relatively close to the same kind of goalkeeping you got out of Can, it's still going to be Guzan's job.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what we kind of thought coming into the season, and this kind of makes that more of a smooth transition.
Yeah, I'll agree with that, but just to echo what both of y'all said, it does suck for Can that he didn't do anything to lose the job, and he's going to lose the job. It's just like one of those Wally Pipp Lou Gehrig situations back in the Yankees back in the day, where unfortunately sometimes an injury causes you to lose a job, and you just gotta applaud what Can did in his time in goal, and and hope that Guzan can play well. And if he struggles or there needs to be a change made, well, you feel comfortable in having Can back there because we've seen what he can do.
Yeah, and it's really a shame. Again, he got basically injured on the last kick of the ball against Columbus. I noticed he didn't take the very last goal kick of the game in stoppage time. He kind of pulled up, and with, you know, with a goalkeeper, you can't come off. They're out of substitutes anyway. But you could see he was hobbling a little bit, and it looked like a muscle injury because he just looked a little uncomfortable. And obviously, when you see a guy can't take his own goal kick, you immediately start to think quad, hamstring, thing like that. You know, he can't plant or he can't get power with his kicking foot. So immediately that made me worried, although the club managed to somehow keep it under wraps for an entire week before going official. But really, really unlucky. Really, really unlucky. I mean, for it to happen like that, the way it happened right at the end of the match in Columbus.
All right, we talked about the crosses against San Jose. Jenna Singleton says, do you guys think that Walks worked on his cross placement between the last two games? It didn't That's seem like it to me. He consistently overshoots the cross. Look, it's something we killed Mears for, is how bad his cross is. And it seems like everything went over the top. I don't care so much. Like, be like 50-50 on your crosses.
Yeah, we'll take 50-50.
I mean, I'm good with that.
Not getting that
I'm
now.
More,
we'll
I'm
take
more.
It.
I'm more about how are the fullbacks getting involved in the attack, and that's where I think Walks has an advantage over Mears. It's not so much are his crosses better, because that look crosses. I mean, you're not gonna hit them all. I mean, as much as I crap on Vijadba for missing as many as often as he's not going to hit them all, and I know that. I just want consistency. If he can hit on half of them, that's fine with me.
And I think Walks, his crossing hasn't been great. I think you definitely can see that he's not super comfortable with that position when he gets forward, but I think he's improving. And another thing he gives you over Mears is just that young, youthful athleticism. He can get up and down the line.
He's just more involved in the attack. That's all I care about. Just be more involved in the attack.
One thing we talked about is how often have you seen Mears would get the ball, slow it down, and come back. We have seen Walks missed on some crosses. We have seen him miss on some passes, but none of them were because of him slowing the play down, slowing the tempo down. Yeah. So he has the right idea. I think it's a matter of him becoming more comfortable in that position. And one thing I wanted to ask you guys, and this is something we've discussed quite a bit, so do you guys think that Mears is officially second choice now going forward?
Oh, yeah, he's toast.
Yeah.
I just think that you've already seen Anton Walks come in and, you know, score that goal. And I think that there certainly isn't a drop off in play
that's clear.
Mears to Walks, and Walks has been better, quite frankly.
Yeah,
I mean, to me, it's an easy choice, but again, I'm not gonna. Walks isn't gonna play every single game for the rest of this season.
Well, you've got to rotate, of course, and this all came about from simply rotating Mears being an older guy with heavy legs, and Walks happened to come in and play very well. I mean, we see Bloom get a shot at it next. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how Tata handles that position, because you've basically got four right backs now, in Walks, Lloyd, Mears, and Bloom.
Looking back, I'm glad that Tata. It seemed like Tata gave Mears has given. Is giving Tito, and Tito's doing a better job than maybe Mears is. I'm trying to think who else. He's giving these players as much opportunity as possible. He's letting that look. If it's not gonna happen, it's because you failed to meet up to the expectations of his team or whatever. He's giving them every opportunity to succeed. And with Walks, he's just succeeding a little more consistently than Mears is right now. That could change in 2 weeks.
Sure, absolutely.
You know, you don't know what happens against teams that decide, all right, well, you know, Garza has been pretty good. Perez and Parker aren't bad. Let's just attack that right side. Let's just see what happens.
And you've seen
teams
do that.
Let's just attack that right side and go hard and see. Well, right side for them? No, it'd be the left side.
Their left.
Let's just attack that left side and see what happens. Nothing but going left. And maybe he struggles with that. And, I mean, I don't know of a lot of right backs that wouldn't struggle. But the point is, someone's going to find the weakness. A lot like what I said earlier this season, that someone's going to figure out how to break this team down. Someone's going to figure out, specifically toward the end of the season, how to break down the young guys. How to take advantage of their weaknesses, how to take advantage of the weaknesses of the back line in general, and they're gonna utilize that. When we play against the better teams, I'm not saying Columbus and San Jose aren't the better teams, but you know, the teams that can, you know, like Toronto FC, that's the kind of the gold standard right now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They're a team that can break you down. And they're a team that can really look at your flaws and go, all right, well, we're gonna attack that side and be good to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you can see the difference. What's interesting to me is it's I feel like the league is kind of noticing that you can kind of get out of your style against Atlanta United if you, and it's something we talked a lot of after the DC match, is just kind of high press, put Atlanta United under pressure, and they will inevitably make a mistake that leads to a chance. And we saw San Jose come out like that as well. So what's interesting to me are the teams like a Toronto, like a Dallas, like a Chicago at this point, teams that are kind of settled in their style and have had really good success, when they play Atlanta United, are they going to try to do that, or are they going to say, look, the worst team in the league was able to high-press Atlanta United into submission, we should do the same? And it's certainly, it's hard to tell exactly what San Jose's tactics are, because they've got Leach managing, obviously, with Kinnear going out the door. But certainly they came out playing that high-pressure style. And aside from Colorado, and to an extent Columbus, we've kind of seen that same tactical setup against Atlanta United again and again and again. So what I'm interested to see is, when you do come against those Torontos down the line here later in the season, is are they going to play the way they're used to, the way they've had a lot of success with, or are they just going to say, let's make this simple and let's just make things difficult on Atlanta, and inevitably we will win the ball back and create opportunities?
Guys, we haven't talked about one thing yet, and I wanted to bring this up. It's the red card to
Oh, yeah, how have we not talked about that yet?
Off the two yellows, and obviously he should have been carded with the first – he should have been red carded the first challenge. I mean,
yeah, the Kofi Sarkodie,
most ridiculous challenges I've ever seen in my life. And then, like, 10 minutes later after the challenge happens, I start to see the GIFs and stuff, and that made it even worse.
I mean,
he goes
terrible.
In two-footed, just almost scissoring the legs there, and it was just absolutely ridiculous. And it's funny, because I didn't get this confirmed, but I thought that there might have been a representative from the league in terms of VAR and maybe doing, like, the trial runs that they've been doing in some of these games. And I would really be interested to know that on VAR, if that's one that would pretty obviously have been turned into a straight red.
If they're using the same rules that we've seen at Confederations Cup, that would be one where the video assistant referee goes and looks and says, yeah, dude just came in two-footed, left his feet, and could have ended, you know, Yamil Assad, to put him out for a long period of time. That challenge really, really angers me. I think, you know, you've seen people...
It was absurd!
And, you know, Sam, you hear people talk about Assad, and certainly there is a degree of validity to this, but talking about, and people talk a lot about diving and flopping and how
look, he draws the foul.
No, I get that, and how people need to, how leagues need to go back and penalize the divers and the floppers. This is the crap that's got to get out of the game. That's an absolutely criminal tackle. He's upset because Assad won a 50-50 with him, and Sarkodie just comes and leaves. He's absolutely know exactly what he's going to do from the second that he makes up his mind he's going to make that challenge. And he does it right in front of the referee, two-footed, can cause serious, serious injury, and the referee sees that he's right there and shows him a yellow card. I mean, that's the type of stuff that we need to see leagues start going back at and cutting out. I'm all for getting diving out of the game, all that, but we see these challenges time and time again going unpunished, and we see more and more serious injuries. I mean, you talk about, for instance, the Seamus Coleman injury in the World Cup qualifier in the last couple months, and you just see it time and time again with referees not punishing these challenges, and then leagues saying, oh, well, the referee has seen it, so we're not going to go back and turn this into a red card. And you've got to do something about this, because you can't have guys like Kofor Sarkodie making a challenge like that. It's crazy.
Well, see, the second yellow he got, that was an absolute makeup call.
Absolutely.
There was no way that was a yellow card.
The second yellow.
And as soon as I saw him pull out the yellow, I was like, he knows he done messed up.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the only solution he can think of is, all right, well, the next little thing he does, if it's even close, I'm giving him another yellow, and he was gone.
And can I say one thing again? I've mentioned this before. Home crowd, you made the difference on that
one.
Oh,
my gosh.
That is not I don't think that's a second yellow on the road, you know? So be as biased as possible. Be irrational. Yell at the referee, you know, like, because you will get these little swing calls like that, and certainly the referee is known that Sarkodie is lucky to be on the pitch already. Assad feels that contact from behind, goes and sells it, goes down immediately. And I think the ref at that point, between the crowd, between what he's already seen from Sarkodie, is saying, well, I'm just going to show another yellow there, because this guy clearly has no business being on the pitch at this point with the way he's behaved over the first 30 minutes. So I didn't think and maybe you guys disagree, I would never have carded that, but I didn't feel bad.
I didn't feel bad.
And I certainly get Atlanta United deserved to be up 11-10.
Well, we know Bernardes got the red card there in stoppage time.
That one I think will get rescinded.
Could you see that from the press box, Sam? What, say that again?
The Bernardes, because there's not clear yeah, footage on exactly television, and then where I was sitting. So from the press box, could you see if he stamped down on him at any point? Because it didn't seem like
You know, I couldn't. All that, there was just a lot of commotion going on, like, around it. That was really all that we were able to see. But outside of that, I mean, Bingham, too, almost got red carded. He did get the yellow for dissent, and then, like, as the ref's
really
walking
pushing
away, like, Bingham said something else, and that ticked the ref off even more, and he almost gave him another yellow card right there, and he stopped
short
of it, and then kind of gave him the, hey, you're done signal, no more of this, and then walked off. So, I mean, San Jose definitely seemed disjointed in terms of their attitude and the way that they were playing the game. It seems like maybe, I don't know if Atlanta United did anything in particular, but they definitely were, you know, kind of out of their minds or just not within the right mind frame.
You know, it's a weird to play against a team that's just changed managers because there's, first of all, people talk about how terrible it is for a manager to get fired. That's equally humiliating for the players because in the end, players win and lose matches. You got your manager
fired.
You were
so bad that you got your manager fired.
So they're embarrassed. You got a new guy in Leach in there that's very energetic. They've played different tactically since he's come in. So I thought you saw San Jose very energetic, very enthusiastic, very positive, very motivated, trying to prove that they are not that team that got their manager fired. And I thought that was difficult to deal with from Atlanta United because you could see that this was a team at a very high level of enthusiasm and something you're not used to seeing from a team that's struggling, that's going away from home. And you saw them really, really excited to play the game. But at the same time, I think that kind of, I don't, for lack of better, that kind of uneven intensity, that kind of unbridled enthusiasm that you saw from them leads to performances like Kofi Sarkodie's, where you've just got this rush of blood to the head and you can't control your emotions.
Just too much frustration.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought that showed in their play. You could see that this is a team that has been through a very, very rough month. The way they played, I thought you could see, and actually there was a lot of positives for San Jose. They played with a lot of desperation, and you could tell watching them. And I think that if they can bottle that up, stay 11-11, calm down a little bit, they'll be able to right the ship quite quickly.
Let's recap with the goals specifically, because we saw it was a new side of Atlanta United. You know, we're so used to them, you know, countering and going forward as quickly as they can. And in one instance, yeah, they scored that way. But you have one goal come off a corner.
Mm-hmm. Can you believe it?
You have another goal come off a cross. You have two goals come off a cross, one which Joseph does well to basically, he gets it on frame.
That was a great
save by Bingham.
Yeah.
And then Carmona to put it away. Then you have the cross. Who was the cross from? Was that Garza? The cross,
which
one? The one to Martinez?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great moment there. Yeah. I mean, I want Vasquez and Martinez up top.
And yeah, you mentioned
I would love to see. I mean, it's not going to happen. I would just love to see it.
Vasquez almost scored from a set piece. There was another one where Garza put a great ball in. There was a bunch of commotion at the back post. I can't remember what it happened exactly, but I remember it ended up bouncing off Martinez and going out for a goal kick. So it's not just the goals. And particularly the second half, it was lumping crosses into the box, which is not something I think we'd ever be saying, but that was what San Jose gave Atlanta.
They finally had some kind of relative height advantage. I mean, I know Joseph Martinez isn't the tallest guy in the world, but he can get up there, and if you can...
It's incredible. Watching him jump is incredible.
If he can get a good cross in, he's got a shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's not Kenwin Jones height, obviously, but...
Yeah, but...
He's got the ups just to be just as tall, just to be just as dangerous in the box. I saw him work defensively as well on set pieces and corners.
And you mentioned him in the air, Eric. Sometimes that's harder for a defender when it's not a big guy where you know where he is at all times. Martinez is sneaky, so he's you can't always locate him just because he's a little smaller. Kind of like a shorter running back is more difficult to locate for a linebacker. And you could see he's so good in the air, but he was able to get in between those two center backs and find spaces that maybe a bigger guy doesn't, because you're just naturally more aware of someone that's taller, probably a little bit slower as well. And I think you saw Joseph Martinez show that he can go compete with those big boys inside the 18 and get down and dirty and To me, that is the reason Atlanta United is able to get three points.
I forget that this is a new team, so I forget that we're constantly going to be seeing new things out of this team.
Right, yeah. This is fun.
It's we know that they can score on the counter. That's kind of been their bread and butter a little bit.
Yeah.
It's the new ways that they've kind of found, at least against San Jose, and even against Columbus to an extent.
Absolutely against Columbus.
Because you got when's the last time you saw Can really launch a ball up the field? I mean, almost never.
He should
happens.
Have had two assists in the first half.
He should have.
Yeah.
But you're starting to see kind of this team that, all right, we fully understand the system. And maybe that was it. Maybe they just want to really dedicate themselves to learning the system. They didn't care what the cost was in terms of points in the first half.
I think that's part of it.
That now, okay, we understand it. We get it. We know what we're looking for.
That's
and now
point.
We can just go forward and take advantage of, Columbus Crew being spread out across the field. We can take advantage of San Jose being down to 10 men. We can take advantage of, the defensive mismatch that Martinez presents to multiple defenders across the bat. Right. Him by himself is a dangerous man. You saw that, I believe, on that goal of Ujadba, he was initially covered by two guys, and then he broke off and was covered by one. No, it was just one guy. I forget who it was.
Which goal?
The Tito Ujadba goal. The long one from Khan to Can to
Martinez was there and Mensah
he was the distraction. He was the one drawing
I'm not really
the attention.
Sure what
Mensah
was doing, but yeah.
And here comes Ujadba out of nowhere, seemingly, and boom, scores.
And that's what we kind of just talked about is when you have a guy centrally that just takes so much attention out of those center backs, and then you have two wingers that can kind of sneak inside and both can provide some end product for you. That's just such a difficult type of team to match up with for your defense. And clearly, that was on full display in Columbus with a team that played a bit of a higher line, tried to come forward a little bit more, and that just opened up all that space to get in behind. And you saw, even if it's coming from the goalkeeper, you have a player like Ujadba with the touch and end product and good enough movement to get into that position. And you could see, like I said, even if it's coming all the way from Alec Can, you can create an opportunity from that.
Josh, how dare you not respect the intelligence of our fans by comparing soccer to football with that Joseph Martinez short running back analogy? I take great.
Are you upset,
to that,
Sam?
Sir.
I apologize. I never want to upset you. Oh man,
that was my impersonation of the hipster who gets mad when you try to compare soccer to football.
I'm usually that guy, actually. So
yeah, soccer guy.
That's usually me. Yeah, that's usually me. I try to speak to the people. So I tried to make the linebacker running back analogy. Although I do think it applies in that situation. But
well,
I'm usually that guy.
Josh,
that's usually me whining about terminology and all that.
All right. So obviously we talked a great deal about the attack, and then we went on a couple tangents there in the middle, but. Defensively, you look at let's.
We need to talk about the defense.
We know about Walks. We've already talked at length about him. Garza obviously did this. He's been the most consistent guy, I think.
Well, you know exactly what you're going to get from him.
Any of the back line, not just what you're going to get from him in the attack, just what you're going to get from him the entire 90 minutes. You're going to get a workhorse. Yeah. You're going to get a guy that runs up and down that left side all night, all day long. He's the only one, I think. I mean, if Walks can string together a few more games, he's going to be, second in line there. But the fullbacks have been – sorry. Garza has been incredibly consistent throughout the entire season so far. Walks is getting to that point where you can start to you can know more or less what to expect from him. Parkhurst and Perez are going to have good games. They're going to have bad games.
Yeah.
And you have no idea which is going to be which.
And it's tough.
See, Tito, it seems like it's – all right, he's going to have a good game.
And it's different for an attacking player.
He's going to have a good game, and he's going to be a little off.
Right.
Yeah.
The center back, you can't have that kind of type of inconsistency.
I thought Parkhurst did well. He
was fine.
He was on Team of the Week after the Columbus game, which I love you, Parkhurst, but I don't know how you made that.
I think they just saw a clean sheet and put one of the center backs.
I think the way the two goals were given up, I think that I just. It's hard for me to sit here and judge because, again, in those moments, the because I think it's Larenowitz that gets that touch, right? Is it Larenowitz? It's Perez.
Perez got the touch on the first
one.
So,
yeah, it's hard for me to complain. Like, you did.
That was very unlucky.
You did exactly what you needed to do.
That was very unlucky.
And unfortunately, it just went right into the hands of Tommy Thompson.
The first goal is, I thought both.
Or the feet of Tommy Thompson.
Yeah, but, and he was fantastic, by the way. I thought the two goals against San Jose are the two types of goals we're seeing Atlanta concede from mistakes. The first type is making mistakes in the midfield in your own half, giving the ball away, putting your defense in a bad situation, which we saw Tito Villalba do on the opening goal.
And I think it should be stated that that's when, obviously, Perez and Parker look at their worst, is when mistakes happen in the midfield.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's going to happen naturally because of the you know, just the way these games go, is that if you make a mistake in the midfield, you turn it over, then you're looking at a numbers advantage for whoever's in the attack, and
right,
obviously Parkhurst and Perez are
and that's another area where they'll have to improve, yeah, because again, when you play the way, and we've said this over and over, when you play the way Atlanta United play, you're going to have to expect to get into a lot of 1v1 situations as a defender. But it's the second goal that worries me more, is that we've seen quite a few times this team just kind of concede from nothing, just because from losing focus, from not marking tightly, from getting caught up in the moment, and clearly that's what happened again on that second goal. The first goal, I think it's more like what you said, Eric. That's one of those things that's going to happen. I mean, you can't always hold the ball in your own half. And certainly I thought that was massively unlucky. You know, Perez, I thought we defended actually pretty well. But Perez with the deflection goes straight to Tommy Thompson for the finish. But it's the second goal that can't happen, because if you're allowing a 40, 50 yard cross, and conceding goals, that can happen at any time. In any match, whether you have 80% possession, 70% possession, whatever. If you're conceding goals like that, where you're just allowing simple crosses into the box and switching off, we saw Nyarko scored in D.C.,
yeah,
a similar play like that for D.C. United. That's the type of stuff that can't happen, and that's what worries me more. I think that naturally you'll see these players become more accustomed to getting to those difficult positions, defending counterattacks, but it's the mental side of the game that really has to improve, or you're just going to keep conceding, even when you're not making mistakes on the ball, giving the ball away going forward. And you create a situation where even when your offense is playing very well, you can quite easily concede at the drop of a dime. And we saw that against a 10-man San Jose team. So that's the area where we've got to clean things up, and it all starts with those two center halves.
Yeah, and I think one thing I noticed with the defense in the game against San Jose, not so much against Columbus.
They were great against Columbus.
Really,
I don't know where that came from.
Really,
they were so
Columbus.
Good. I have no idea what happened.
I still don't really understand how Parkhurst gets on Team of the Week. Again, love you, Parkhurst, but
well, that's why
there must have been a lot of bad defending across the league.
I think that the real issue was that what we're starting to see is that Atlanta United just has to figure something out on restarts or even starts, because obviously allowing the goal in the second minute there was basically
right,
just akin to allowing one off of a restart, even though it was the first start of the game. And then, you know, you can't get caught ball watching there on Wondolowski's goal. So, you know, and we talked about this a little bit earlier, but you've got to figure out something better, and in terms of keeping the team focused on restarts, because that is just something that
yeah,
you cannot have happen. And Josh even said this a minute ago, like better teams in the playoffs will crush you on that. So if you do score, you've got to be able to hold that, because look, Atlanta United had a lot of momentum, and obviously they were going up against 10 men for the majority of this game. So that made things a lot easier in coming back. But, you know, if you're doing that, you know, 11v11, it's going to be a lot harder to come back from those kind of just back-breaking goals off
yeah,
of restarts. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things that I think is not being mentioned, and we can spend just a few minutes on this before we can, you know what, if any of the anyone on Facebook Live has any questions, we're going to do this one little quick hit real quick, and then we'll answer any questions and then wrap it up. So one of the things that I think hasn't been talked about, and I've noticed, at least over the past couple games, is notice how Atlanta United hasn't. We were so known for, at least toward the beginning of the season, of, you know, the quick goals to start the games. Not so much anymore. Mm-hmm. Now it's what I'm noticing is we'll have rough first halves. They'll get into the locker room. They'll have some kind of discussion with Tata. In the second half,
yeah,
it is almost not a completely different team, but it, like, something was turned on. Like the NOS button was hit, and all of a sudden, and these 11 players are in a different sort of form. because it whatever adjustments he's been making, the different adjustments he's been making at halftime to attack these opponents has been almost perfect, at least in the last, I want to say, three games. And, I mean, you look at San Jose, they go into the locker room down 1-0.
Up 1-0. San Jose?
San Jose,
yeah.
Is,
yeah. Up 1-0.
Atlanta
yeah.
goes into the locker right, room down 1-0. And, it, I mean, outside of that fluky goal in the second half, they score 4.
Yeah, and the concentration is
yeah, oh, yeah, and but you level. Saw that the way that they attacked this team was different. Again, one of the things that Tata Martino was kind of killed on in Barcelona is, and I think even a little bit, I think mostly in Argentina, is his lack of adjustments.
Right,
there's not a lot of stuff you can do with guys like Messi. You know, it's a lot of, you know, give him the ball and just let him do his thing.
Yeah, I mean, he does the work.
There's not a lot of tactical things that we can do when a team is so established with so much star power. Both at Barcelona, both with Argentina. With Atlanta United, he's starting to prove that, yeah, I can make these tactical adjustments at halftime and prove that my team is stronger coming out of the locker
That's
room.
A good point. And I was actually going to mention that as well. I think that, and maybe you guys agree or disagree, I think Tata's shown a little bend to his tactics the last two matches. And I thought one thing I forgot to mention is, particularly in Columbus, that's the first time I've seen Atlanta United happy to drop into their own half and defend and not go high press. And I think that it showed a great adeptness on the part of Tata, and that he's just kind of realized that going away from home, he can't play, you know, 100% aggressive the way that he wants. Then you come back home and play San Jose, and you're kind of in a weird possession where it becomes 11-10. But what do we start to see? We start to see, say, okay, they're conceding those wide areas. Let's get it wide. Let's put an aerial ball into the box, which, again, is not something that Tata Martino is usually telling his teams to do. So I think he has shown some of that flexibility that maybe he's been criticized for not having in the past. Not a ton of it. Just tweaking things a little bit. And I think he's shown that the last two matches, and it's shown in the results. Now, why is he doing that? I mean, it could be because he came to the realization that, you know, he doesn't have Lionel Messi. He doesn't, you know, he doesn't have a Lavezzi. He doesn't have an Aguero like he does at Argentina. You know, he doesn't.
Hopefully, it didn't take him this long to realize.
Right. But right. Okay, so that's phrased poorly, right? But he's realizing I need a little bit of flexibility with these guys in my system. I can't just kind of turn them loose and let them go. I mean, that could be part of the reason. It could just be him being in a position he hasn't been before in terms of a team just being absolutely horrible on the road and conceding kind of weird goals. But I think the last two matches, you definitely saw a different type of tactical approach. Not a huge difference, but a different tactical approach from Atlanta United home and away.
I think one thing too. You just seen such a unwillingness over the years from a lot of different managers to make those little adjustments
right.
and to, you know, accept defeat in trying to run certain tactics, obviously, and I'm going to pull a Josh here and bring a different sport into things. We've seen some very great minds become bullheaded and not able to have success because of it. Look at Phil Jackson and then
yeah,
York
all
and
sports.
What he did with the Knicks.
Yeah.
So, I mean, not willing to budge from the triangle there. And Tata showing a little bit of adaptability and a little bit of bend in terms of what this team needs to do to be successful.
Right.
Eric, I'm glad you brought this up because I am floored at the adjustments that Atlanta United made at halftime coming out and taking that game by the scruff of the neck. Again, it was against 10 men, so there were some easy, you know, things to exploit there. But, you know, having a 11-10 man advantage is one thing, but being able to exploit it is completely different. And I think San Jose did a really good job at times not showing that they were down a man.
Yeah.
See, I you guys mentioned bend on the tactics. I don't think he bent. I just think he tweaked a little thing.
Tweaked.
Not even tweaked.
It's the same principles.
But see, it's not even tweaked. To me, yeah. It's just, okay, look, they're giving you this? Fine. Within our system, when they give you this, you do this.
Right.
That's what wasn't happening to me in the first half of the season. Or at least
well,
outside
really
of the last three
games
or so. Yeah. Now it's okay. Well, they're gonna get spread out because before, what did I complain about? Look, I forget who it was. I forget who it was that I was complaining about. But they were giving you exactly what you wanted. You were spread out. The other team was spread out. They were opening up space in midfield. They were allowing you the opportunity to play over the top and let guys like Tito run on to balls. They were opening up the field so that Admiro in the middle could take the ball, turn, and go. And we were still playing out of the back and forcing passes. And now, I mean, look at the last game, just for example. you saw, or against Columbus. Again, a team that is going to press you a little bit, it's going to try to possess a little bit, and when they got spread out, Can goes over the top,
right.
Boom, goal to Tito.
Right, right.
No, yeah, I know that's not how the first goal, as the second goal was, but it was. You're starting to see this. It's adaptability is the best word, but it's not so much okay, well, this isn't working. Let's move on to this thing. It's,
oh, not at all.
It's a different. I don't know how to say it. It's a different thing within their system. Well, it's a different aspect of their system.
I think one thing that you said, Eric, is just taking what the opposition gives you. Obviously, and you hit the nail on the head. It's not as if he changed the shape or he wants to play a different tempo.
They're still going to be a high pressing team,
but it's more of okay. If we get the ball out wide, let's cross it in. Let's not try to knock it around and keep holding it. And certainly, I think you compare, you know, we talk about this team looking a little bit different. And I know that the Chicago game where we're up a goal, up a man, but we played completely differently against the 10-man team. And both teams were similar in that they were conceding the wings. And against Chicago, obviously, we did very well. I mean, there I think we completed like 70, 75 passes in a row at one time. But this was completely different. This was, obviously, you're holding possession, but then let's get the ball wide, let's put it in the mixer, and let's see what we can do. So like you say, Eric, it's not like Tata's switched to a different shape or something like that, but he's just made some small, I mean, I think you nailed it. You said tweaks. He's made some small tweaks to how the team is set up, but still holding on to the same principles. And we talked about, for instance, Columbus. It's the same thing we've seen from them. It was a counterattacking, more direct style, but they just sat back a little deeper.
I think we're going to see towards the end of the season is that these changes, these adaptations within the game aren't going to wait until halftime.
Oh,
you're
right.
You're
going to
see the team. You're going to see guys like Garza, guys like Walks. You're going to see Almiron. You're going to see Assad. You're going to see Tito. Recognize that, okay, they're playing a specific way. All right, within our system, we're going to attack it this way. We're still going to be doing the basics of our system, high pressing, building out of the back, stuff like that. But if the opportunities present themselves where in building out of the back, we see a moment where Villalba is 1v1 on that right side and Can's got the ball, or whatever, Guzan's got the ball, launch it long and see if you can't catch them on their heels a little bit.
It's an interesting point, Eric, because we've talked a lot about how Atlanta United have won a lot of games in a lot of different ways, and it's more about how the opposition plays. And then we keep talking about Columbus, San Jose. Columbus, you go there, concede, I don't want to say concede possession, but Columbus wins the possession battle, and yet we create a ton of chances going direct. Then you come home and you dominate possession. Obviously, 11v10, but I think that that's a game we dominate possession regardless. You get 65% possession or whatever it is, and you go win that type of game. So you're seeing Atlanta United get into drastically different types of matches based on the way the opposition sets up. So it's going to be very, very important for the players on the pitch, like you say, Eric, to recognize that early and then make that little tweak to their game on their own without Tata having to tell them at the break at halftime.
Maybe it's clear for them. Maybe it becomes more evident for us.
I think we're seeing a better understanding every week.
I think just what we're seeing, it's specifically in the last couple of games, the difference in how this team attacks opponents after halftime has been the difference in my book. All right, so we're going to take just a couple of your questions. All right, any news on Assad's permanent appointment? From what I understand, there's no news. That is just, if I had to guess, and I haven't talked to anyone on the inside, if I had to guess, it's they're still working out a permanent deal or still working out the details to a permanent deal. I don't know. I'm all for it. I'm all for making a permanent. He's proved his worth more than just a loanee.
Yeah, no, and I think he fits well. I think he's a player that the league really struggles with.
Young. He's a workhorse.
It's been pretty funny to watch some of the 1v1 matchups, and some of these dudes are like, holy crap.
He's got the technical ability.
I've never gone up against a guy like this before that can take the ball off me, that can win a tackle, that can go 1v1. You know, he can do everything, and I think you've seen so many times wings and fullbacks just shocked at what a versatile, great player he is. I don't know if he'll be in the MLS for a long, long time, but I think he's definitely found a home in Atlanta. The system fits him perfectly. He seems to be enjoying his football. And certainly I'd like to see him stay here, bring him in and have him here long term, because I think he's been fantastic for the team, and certainly he embodies exactly what Atlanta United wants to display every time they go on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, I can't argue with any of that. I think that obviously he's been a very good player. I think a lot better than what a lot of people thought he would be.
I agree. Although not his best form right now.
Say that again?
Not. I'd say he's hit a little spot of bad form these last few matches. I wouldn't be too worried. Just throwing that out there.
I'm trying to think. Didn't he have an assist against Columbus? No, he didn't.
I think he went back to D.C.
D.C., yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Look, hey, the only thing, I think he's still the leader, league leader in assists.
Yeah, he's 9 or 10. Yeah, no, he's been great. Just the last couple matches, he hasn't been at his best, but
the first half of the season, I didn't give him enough credit.
The first quarter of the season?
Yeah, there you go. But no, if I want to be really nitpicky, I just want to I want him to have, and not because I want him to see him score or anything like that, or that he needs to score. What I would love to see is for him to have that I just scored.
He needs to get on the goal. I agree.
He doesn't need a goal to solidify why he should be a permanent player for Atlanta United. I want him to have that moment.
Yeah.
I want him to just be able to I'm sure he enjoys it with his teammates when he gets the assist, but I want him to have his own moment.
I think he wants it too. I mean, if you're a right-footed player playing on the left, one of your main threats is to cut in and shoot.
I would love to see him score a goal like he had in preseason.
I think he will at some point. Oh, the Chattanooga goal?
You've seen him try a couple times, yeah. And it just hasn't come off.
At some point he will. Yeah.
That'd be nice.
Remember he did score the first ever goal for Atlanta United.
In preseason. Well, actually, no, that was in the actual game. Never mind. Yeah, that's
what you mean.
But he hasn't scored since, right?
No, we tend to forget that because Atlanta United lost that game against.
No, he scored against RSL. Bulls,
but still, yeah, he will go
did
down
he score
in
against
history.
RSL?
Yeah, when they gave the ball away and Almiron is a tap in, and Almiron ran down. They gave the ball away in the back. Almiron got it, played a little square ball, and he did the keeper and touched it in.
You have a better memory than me, man.
I've got a great, but still, your point stands, Eric.
I'm not saying you're wrong. My memory sucks, honestly.
I promise you that is correct. But again, a few more goals would be nice.
So Nick from Australia.
So greedy, Joe.
No, and it's not like he doesn't need it. I want him to have that moment. It's for him. I don't care. Like if he doesn't score all season, I'm still gonna pull out his season because he's had a great one.
He plays
so far.
Like this, yeah.
The guy has bukus and bukus of assists, and all Josh wants and all you want.
I want him to have that moment where he can. I don't know. I want him to come up with his own celebration. I feel like he has a good celebration just waiting. Like in this,
you know,
back
he's
pocket.
A character, so I know he's got something good.
All right. Nick
Y'all
from,
are just haters.
Nick from Australia, what happened to Walks, man of the match, and Martinez hitting the spike?
Oh, yeah, that was...
So Walks was named... So Walks was named the...
Well, they announced
man
him as
of
man
the
of the
match, which is done by
the
team, right?
Right. But Martinez hammered...
Martinez did the golden spike, which I think is done by a fan vote.
Ah.
I believe.
Well, they're both done by fan vote, aren't they? Because they do that thing on Twitter, who should be man of the match.
I was confused.
Well, then maybe it's the, I don't know. I know that they tied, honestly. I don't know.
I don't know what that was about. They talked about that a little bit on Soccer Down Here today, too. And they didn't, I mean, it's a source of confusion. I didn't think Antoine Walks was the man of the, I mean, he played fine.
Look, he scored the goal. It was a great goal.
He scored the game winning.
It was a power header.
I think they did it because everyone loves him. He's a young guy. He stepped up. He played well. But to me, Martinez or Garza were higher rated players.
I honestly would have loved to have seen the face of all the Walks haters as soon as he scored that goal.
Oh, yeah.
I would have paid to see those faces.
All I know is it's about time somebody else won this award because Miguel Almirón's probably running out of space for all these guitars.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Tito still wants one, man.
So you get a good.
That was so funny Tito when Eric one. And I, but you know, obviously a bunch of people were in the locker room after that, the DC game, and Tito Villalba was not happy with the way that the vote went down that game.
Really?
Yeah, because he wants a guitar.
He wants a guitar.
Admiral's gotten all these guitars, and
so they give
Tito
you a guitar.
Heineken sponsors it, and they give you a guitar.
Yeah,
which is cool, but then you end up with 5-6 guitars.
Well, Almirón does.
Yeah,
Martinez has, I think, one. Maybe two.
One or two. He probably has two.
I'm trying to think who else even has one.
Because he probably got
one.
The Chicago.
I'm trying to think who else even has one at home. I think Almirón has the most. I think he has, what, five now?
Yeah, and Assad had one, I believe, the very first game. He was,
yeah, I think
he was
you're
the
right.
guitar receivee.
Oh, obviously.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Does the man in the match automatically go to an Atlanta United player at home?
Yes.
Is that done by Atlanta United?
Yeah, with respect to that is a heavily biased man of the match.
No, obviously.
But it's all, yeah, it always
I'm
goes
trying
to
think,
the
after
Atlanta
that
player.
First after that first game, I thought, I remember thinking, I look up at the Jumbotron and then they're naming the man of the match, and it was for the first goal, but I was like, yeah, it seems kind of hollow considering we just lost the game.
Yeah, but you know, gotta go for the home team.
All right, Oswaldo Savaria, what if we win the MLS Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League, and then beat Real Madrid in the Club World Cup?
That sounds good.
This is
we can just end the podcast there, guys. I'm good with that.
Oswaldo lives in La La Land, but
I want wherever he's at, I want to be there.
Give me some of what you're smoking.
Yeah.
Hey, listen. Right now, you look at the standings and you look how far away. Again, it's just a race in the East, really, for at least as of right now, for Supporter Shield and I'm trying to think. I think Supporter Shield's one of the teams that gets in.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
That's just the number one points total.
So if you're only, we're at what, 30 points now? 30 or 31?
I guess
Toronto just won, so they got more points. But the point is, we're in striking distance of Toronto. I think we have more points than anyone in the West, if I'm not mistaken.
It's possible. I mean, certainly the issues that Western teams have had going on the road. I'm not sure FC Dallas. I'm not sure we have more points than FC Dallas. That's pretty.
Yeah, Hold on, 30 and 32.
I'm right.
Eric was right. He remembered.
Atlanta United with 30 points.
Congrats.
FC Dallas with 31. Suck it. I mean, we're not overtaking them, but the point is that we're right there. And with Toronto with the win today, were they at 39?
Yeah, 38 points, I believe.
38
points. If this is updated properly. Yeah. I mean, they're in striking distance.
It doesn't matter. They're within reach. I mean, anything can happen in the second half. Toronto, I don't think, is going to keep on the same form that they're in right now.
And the Supporter Shield winner wins MLS Cup like a third or a quarter of the time.
Often.
So he mentioned CONCACAF Champions League in the question. I would love to see Atlanta United go and play some of these teams in CONCACAF Champions League, go into Mexico and play. Just because of the style that we play, I think that it would be just fireworks.
I think entertaining. Look, as much as I...
Club America and the Azteca?
Yeah,
see, here's
exactly.
the thing, though. As much as I think that, you know, we're... our style would fit a tournament like that, I think we get our asses kicked.
Well, I'm not saying we're
whooping
him, but it'll be fun. It'll be fun
kicked.
To watch. And I think a good experience because you'll be playing against teams that a lot of them play that similar style of soccer to Atlanta United. But I would love to see, I agree with you, Eric. I mean, certainly the results with the MLS teams going to Mexico speak for themselves.
I would love
to see in the future this Atlanta United team, as Sam says, go down and play Club America, you know, at El Azteca, go play Chivas in Guadalajara or something like that. I think it would be really, really cool to watch, although the result have not boded well historically for the MLS sides.
Hey, right. If not Atlanta United, who, you know?
Right, yeah. If not us, who else?
Well, there's...
20. No, no.
Shut up, Eric.
Nope. 22 after next year. Listen to this guy.
Should we rotate?
Hater.
Should we rotate? This comes from Joe Patrick. Should we rotate Larry to save his legs or let it ride? If so, how do we rotate?
Everyone knows Larry is Laurentiewicz, right?
Yeah.
Everyone's figured that one out? Best
Larry
name ever.
Larry is Jeff Laurentiewicz.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's got 2 weeks off right now.
Larry.
Yeah, this is why the last two games are so important, because you were going into this break and you needed to go on a high. And the 9 points we got in the last three games are perfect.
Yeah.
You go into this break feeling good. Here's the thing I will say. Once you're out of this break, like with 5 days left in this break, I need everyone to think, the fans, I need business time. No more, you know, you forget everything that's happened up until that point, and you act as if every game is pretty much a must win. Because I feel like this team, when their back's against the wall, does better, performs better. Nope. They play with more.
Yeah,
they play
true.
More intensely. They're more eager to go to goal. That's what to me has been the biggest relief, is that this team wants to go to goal more often than they did. You know, kind of this middle part of that first quarter of the season.
That's true. And you've definitely seen that. I think with respect to Laurentiewicz, he's a big part of that, because and we've talked about this a lot.
Him and Carmona,
him and Carmona, I think they're pairing and understanding. Laurentiewicz, a player that, we've talked about this a lot, but a player that sits back and plays conservatively, whereas Carmona is a defensive mid, but he's trying to get it stuck in and go box to box and press high. I think they're a perfect pairing for each other. One thing I will say is, you know, with regards to the question, maybe you have to rotate Laurentiewicz at some point, but that is one player I am very worried about the balance of this team without him. I think you saw when he was out You saw early in the season before you started to play Laurentiwicz in that specific role that he was in now, you could see, I mean, he makes such a big difference. And, I mean, there might be a chance you have to rotate him, but that's one guy that I really struggle to see a situation where you're able to replace him and continue to perform the way you want.
To me, you might be forced to rotate him just to get someone used to playing that position. He has to drop back in between the center
backs. So do we think it's McCann? Who has had a really poor season?
Look, if anything, I'm not going to put McCann in that position. I'll put McCann in that Carmona spot and drop Carmona back into
that's what
the
I was going to say
because
we've seen
because at least Carmona knows maybe a little better what situations he.
I think he's better on the ball too.
He can and can't, you know, go
that's
forward.
True.
He understands that. Okay, McCann's up. That's normally where I would have been. I need to drop back now.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a better understanding from Carmona what is required of that Laurentiwicz role.
Yeah, and you've seen the times where Laurentiwicz hasn't been there, or even whether he's not on the pitch or just not in position, you've seen Carmona comfortable sliding into that role. I think he's good on the ball. But the problem then becomes you play next to a guy like McCann that doesn't cover that ground that Carmona can, which opens up a huge gap in the middle of the pitch. So it's going to be interesting whenever that time is when you rest Laurentiwicz. It's going to be very, very interesting to see how the new CDM pairing does.
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
I guess he agrees.
Well, it's just, I think that with Laurentiwicz, the thing is, like, you would think that McCann would be such a, you know, spot-on replacement for a guy like
right.
that, and it just either hasn't worked out that way or, you know, Tata Martino doesn't, you know, trust him in that role. So, you know, this is why you have guys on your bench to come in and spell the guys when they need a break, and I would think that you know, he would be an ideal replacement, but I just don't know if that's going to be the case, and it just kind of keeps going back to the old thing that we talk about a lot is, you know, were McCann and Kenwin Jones just signings that were made before Tata got here and just guys that he hasn't, you know, meshed or gelled with.
I mean, that's what in McCann's case, that's what it seems like. He just seems like someone that doesn't fit. I mean, we haven't even seen him coming on consistently as a defensive sub.
Here's the thing. We thought McCann would be one of the staples of this team.
Well, we were shocked when Gressel was in the first. We thought it was be McCann.
Yeah.
I remember
thinking, you know, well, this is a guy who's played in Europe. He's played, you know, across the different divisions in England. I'm thinking this guy's got to be, you know, good enough to be a starter in this league on this team. Could not have been more wrong.
Yeah, I mean, like Sam said, there were several guys like that where you look at the resume, you know, you look at where they've been and what they've accomplished, and you kind of expected them to come in and really dominate. And I think in some ways, just we didn't know the team, you know, and you just see a name like Kenwin Jones, you see that a player like Chris McCann that's been all across England, and you expect them to play a big role. But I think certainly, you know, it does go to show that MLS is, I think, a much better league than people give it credit for, that these guys come over and they are not automatically slotted into the starting lineup. But it also goes to show two other things, and I think one of those is how well Atlanta United has done at picking players that fit their system. So we haven't noticed those guys that don't fit that often. And it also shows how difficult Tata Martino's system is to play if you don't fit, even if you're a player that's played in the Premiership, like the two guys we just mentioned. If you don't fit that system, if you can't cover a lot of ground, if you're not technical enough to hold on to the ball with the ball at your feet, you know, it's just not going to happen. No matter how good of a player you are, you have to fit the system. You have to match up and mesh with the other 10 guys on the pitch.
All right, next two games for Atlanta United. Next game is July 21st.
Yeah, what is it? It's that purple team, right?
Against Disney FC.
Disney, right, Disney FC.
Yeah,
that's
the 29th.
Well,
No, you're right. They're back-to-back.
The 21st is away.
I'll be there.
That's correct.
Who's going to Orlando? Roll call.
Then they come to Atlanta, and they play again. I can't Ooh-wee. Think of a like now in the moment that we're in now, where we're you know it looks like
it's gonna be fun.
And I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I mean Orlando just lost tonight. They didn't make up any ground on Atlanta United. They had a chance to overtake them for that fourth spot. That's not gonna happen.
They've played one more match too.
I would just love
how great would it be
to
if we
beat
just
them both times.
Mess them up home and home. I think that might.
And look, we're catching them at the. I mean, they're going to go into this break thinking, all right, perfect time for us to regroup. I want to go in there and just punch them right in the face, score in the first 5 minutes, and just roll out of there 4-0 or something like that. That'd be so awesome.
It would be awesome. And that those games are going to be absolutely crazy, I think, because you talked about the desperate situation Orlando is in, Eric, in terms of the way that they've played over the last month, and obviously dropping the game at home tonight with Toronto didn't do them any favors. So it's a big game for them, both in the nature of where they stand in the table as compared to Atlanta United. That's also a huge match for the fans, regardless of the fact that Orlando is in a tough place right now. That match has been circled on their calendars since preseason.
Yeah, their fans are going to love this. I think that the rivalry is going to make its way on the field.
And this is a great way to get it kicked off. Home and home, but, you know, right away,
because look,
back to back.
The rivalry right now is just between the fans. The players don't know each other all that well.
They don't care. And fans make rivalries.
I think that if any of the Atlanta United players are listening to this by chance and, you know, laughing at the things that we say, which would be totally understandable.
Yeah.
I need someone to demonstrate, to illustrate the importance of this game for the fans. I want them to say, we know this is a huge game for the fans.
Yeah.
Because
that's a good point.
Look, if you happen to have had any run-ins with Orlando City fans on Twitter, it's going to get so much worse.
Oh, it's going to be nuts.
These next 2 weeks.
It's going to be nuts.
And God forbid that we lose either of those games. Oh, my gosh. It's going to be heightened by 10.
Yeah, and I agree
with you. It's going to be really bad. There's
going
to be insults. There's going to be dirty language thrown in both directions, and it's going to get really bad.
Absolutely.
It's going to get super ugly.
You know, this is set up to be, I think, one of MLS's great rivalries. I mean, we talk a lot about the Cascadia teams in the Northwest, you know, and that there aren't a lot of true big rivalries in the MLS.
What's the Cascadia of the South?
Exactly.
Well, the sort of South, because Orlando's not.
We've got the Cascadia of the South, Atlanta, and whatever Orlando is supposed to be. But I think it's set up for like a really cool special rivalry, and you're going to see these teams play each other back to back weekends, get to know each other very well right away. And I agree with you, Eric. I'd like to see.
We have a while to talk about this game, but next game for Atlanta United, and you can't help but think about it.
I would like to see a little bit of extra nastiness. I would like to see Carlos Carmona, you know, do something early, you know, take a yellow or something, remind him. You know, I want to see the players understanding that this has potential to be a great rivalry.
I want Perez just out of nowhere go from his center back position all the way to the kickoff and just slide tackle the hell out of Kaká.
Well, that might happen anyway.
Just no rhyme or reason. Before the opening whistle is gone, just boom, take him out.
And I think you might see that type of play
don't
from
actually,
both teams.
Don't actually do that, Perez. Right. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I hope he might. They take that too literally. But
I'm just kidding.
But no, I we're gonna see an extra.
I mean, his name
isn't
Kofi Sarkodie.
Yeah, he's not. Yeah, that I don't want to see. I don't want to see two-footed. That's obvious red card stuff. I want to see some sneaky, I'm getting stuck in. This is a big match. We're going to see you guys next weekend. We want you to remember us. That's what I want to see from Atlanta, just showing that extra, that little bit of extra that you see in rivalry matches.
All right, it's been a great last 3 weeks.
It's been fun.
With the results from Atlanta United.
Yeah.
Great wins on the road, great wins at home. Let's hope these 2 weeks they rest, they relax, they get whatever they need to get out of their system in terms of healing up. Go do that. Spend extra time in the hot tub. Spend extra time in the massage, whatever's.
Yeah.
Do what you got to do to rest up, because we're going to need you in the second half. And there's so many home games. There's so many opportunities to get much needed points to make up ground on teams like Toronto FC. There is still a realistic possibility that Atlanta United could really get up to that top spot.
Sure.
Definitely in a position now to host a playoff game.
Which would be
to
awesome.
To host number of playoff games.
Yeah, which would be awesome.
Which would be huge, especially for the city of Atlanta. Especially for as loud as that as Mercedes-Benz is going to be.
Yeah.
Or can be.
Yeah.
As many people as it can, that can fit inside that hopefully we'll be able to fit inside that stadium. Oh, the second half of the season is going
to
be special.
It's fun to think All about. Right. Yeah.
Any final thoughts from you guys?
Are we gonna get to hang out at all during this break, guys? Or am
we'll
I not gonna see you guys?
We'll do some U.S. men's national team
stuff. Some Gold Cup stuff. Yeah. Yeah, maybe we can do a little mid-season.
Look, we got to analyze Guzan's performances. He's gonna be the one starting.
Yeah, that's true.
I imagine he's gonna be the one starting.
Yeah. Okay. Well, it'll be good to see you guys over the break, and I hope everyone enjoys the time off. The team needs it. I mean, think the fans, in some ways, are a little bit exhausted with one thing you said, Eric, is the peaks and valleys that this team has had this season. It's been very exhausting.
Right now, it's just we're still going up that peak. Right. I mean, three straight wins.
Right. So let's get that rest. Let's sit back and let's make sure we don't hit another valley coming back here with a home and home against Orlando. And I think it's just what the doctor ordered, getting some time off, and hopefully we'll see the team come out looking fit and ready for the rest of the season when they play Orlando on the 21st.
Let's do it. Sam, anything?
Not really. Just enjoy the time off. You know, get some chores done and things like that, because Atlanta,
we sound like we're actually going on like the All Star
break here down the back stretch, including
we can cover Almirón against
where they're just home all.
Yeah,
the
we're
time,
still gonna have so, podcasts. We're not going anywhere.
Well, I'm just really sad. I'm really sad. I love this. I'm very sad, and I just want to make sure we still get to do this. So that's good to hear.
Saying, go out, get your chores done. Make sure you got everything done, man. Because August, September rolls around, I know a lot of people are gonna be balancing Atlanta United with their college football fixations, with their pro football fixations. So
that's actually
gonna not be as much free time coming up, so make sure to go out, have fun, and get all the stuff done you need to get done.
That's actually a great point, Sam. That's something that slipped my mind. Get all the stuff that like you're on to-do list stuff, your to-do list stuff. Yeah. Go ahead and get it done now, because
games are coming fast and
furious.
You're
gonna be busy after this break. All right, that'll do it for us. Anyone watching on Facebook Live, thanks for sticking around with us. We know they had some broadcast issues early. Hopefully we fix those and you enjoyed the rest of the show. For those listening on the recorded version, thank you. Go rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, whatever platform you happen to be listening to us on. Thanks to CrossFit Vesuvio, our sponsor. And donate to the podcast, patreon.com/MOTS podcast. Until next time, see you later, Atlanta.
Holler.